Via remote, this is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. The U.S. Democratic presidential ticket for the November election is set. Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden picked California Senator Kamala Harris as his vice presidential running mate, making her the first black woman to be named to a major party's ticket for a presidential election. Harris, who was born to a Jamaican father and an Indian mother, is also making history as the first major South Asian American candidate to run in the general election. Social media sites are already full of excitement from many Democrats over the Biden-Harris ticket, including a tweet from former President Barack Obama, who wrote, "This is a good day for our country. Now let's go win this thing." Biden and Harris have a long friendship going back to the days when she was California Attorney General. At the same time, Biden's late son, Beau Biden, was Attorney General in Delaware. Senator Harris will accept the party's vice presidential nomination in a speech next Wednesday at the Democratic National Convention. U.S. President Donald Trump announced an agreement between the federal government and an American biotechnology company to manufacture and deliver 100 million doses of a COVID-19 vaccine candidate. The company, Moderna, is to manufacture the vaccine doses while clinical trials are underway. Trump told reporters at the White House Tuesday, federal government will own these vaccine doses. We're buying them. Three vaccine candidates in the U.S. are in the final stage of human trials. President said the nation is on track to produce 100 million doses as soon as the vaccine is approved and up to 500 million later on. By remote, this is VOA News. The World Health Organization said Tuesday it was holding talks with Russia regarding its recently approved COVID-19 vaccine. Russia Tuesday became the first country to approve a vaccine for use in tens of thousands of its citizens. During a television appearance, President Vladimir Putin claimed the vaccine has proven efficient and forms has passed all the necessary tests. Putin said his daughter has taken the vaccine after two shots at a normal temperature and a high number of antibodies. The announcement was received with global skepticism because the vaccine got approval after less than 2 months of human trials in Russia with a limited number of test subjects. A WHO spokesman said at a UN briefing in Geneva Tuesday that the WHO authorities must review all safety efficacy data before placing their stamp of approval on it. Health authorities in New Zealand are scrambling Wednesday to trace the source of a new outbreak of the coronavirus as the nation's largest city went back into lockdown. Authorities have found four cases of the virus in an Auckland household from an unknown source. The first reported cases of local transmission in the country in 102 days. Auckland was moved to Alert 3 at midday Wednesday, a designation initially set to continue through midnight Friday. That means the non-essential workers are required to stay home while bars, restaurants, and most businesses will be closed. The rest of the country has moved to Alert 2, meaning that mass gatherings are limited to 100 attendees and people are required to socially distance themselves. In other news, the Australian state of Victoria Wednesday reported a record 21 virus deaths and 410 new cases from an outbreak in the city of Melbourne that has prompted a strict lockdown there. State Premier Daniel Andrews said 16 of the deaths were linked to elderly care facilities. And thousands of people took the streets of Mali's capital on Tuesday, renewing calls for President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita to step down despite international mediation efforts to resolve a political crisis there. Protests led by opposition coalition called M5-RFP have raged since June, caused by contested local elections and perceived government corruption and incompetence. Tensions escalated in July when police shot dead at least 11 demonstrators. For more news, join us at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 12th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's vice president is flown to Ghana due to respiratory complications.
We are told that the several tests were given to her. They haven't confirmed whether it was positive, but we are told to the official statement from the vice president's office that she had complications with respiratory problems.
Zimbabwe's opposition apparently stomped by South African envoys sent to investigate alleged human rights abuses. Delays in implementing South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement have come under criticism. Angola postpones this year's local government election, and the status of Kenyan youth on this International Youth Day today, Wednesday.
I've been unable to secure a job for the past 5 years now in this country. The government tends to be not committed to the concerns of the youth in terms of ensuring that they get the necessary and available opportunities.
And Italian government resumes migrant flights to Tunisia. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Vice President Joe Howard Taylor was flown to Ghana yesterday, Tuesday, to seek additional medical care for respiratory complications. A release from the Vice President's office said Ms. Taylor was admitted last Friday at the Aspen Medical Facility in Monrovia for breathing complications. The release also said she responded positively to treatment and that her health has stabilized. Rodney Sear, publisher of Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper, says the Vice President was flown to Ghana to seek further medical attention.
The last few days, since the weekend, she's been taking treatment at the local Aspen Medical Clinic downtown Monrovia. I'm told she's been complaining about breathing problems and stuff. As you know, those with COVID-19 and have pneumonia and asthma are high risk of the COVID-19. So we are told that the several tests were given to her and they haven't confirmed whether it was positive. But we are told to the official statement from the vice president's office that she had complications with respiratory problems. That's the official thing they're going with. They haven't said she's confirmed positive or not.
The press release from the vice president's office said that she was first admitted last Friday at a local clinic. They said that she was responding to treatment. So I guess the main question is now, why fly her to Ghana?
Well, we are told by sources within the government that arrangements were made with the Ministry of Finance for a financial package to have her get a chartered medical flight out of Monrovia. Like I said, we're told because she's very susceptible to asthma and pneumonia, which are higher risk for COVID-19, we're told that the breathing problem she was experiencing may have been related to it, but we haven't been confirmed whether it was COVID-19 or not.
Besides the fact that she had respiratory conditions, what was the cause?
Well, she'd been experiencing heavy breathing. Even those who saw her at the program at the funeral for Representative Mona Pelham Youngblood at the weekend, the lawmaker who died recently from the ruling party, or those who saw her there said she wasn't looking too well. And she does have a long history of asthma and pneumonia. We believe that that may have been the reason why they're taking her to further treatment outside Monrovia. As you know, the health system in Liberia is not that good, and the vice president's health, we understand, is a top priority for the administration.
At the same time, Rodney, the government has announced that President George Weah has suspended indefinitely the Director General of the National Public Health Institute, Dr. Mosoka Fala. What can you tell us about that?
Well, James, there have been a lot of entanglements between the Ministry of Health and the National Public Health Institute of Liberia over the management of the COVID-19 fight in Liberia. There have been issues involving who controls the funding and the way the testing were being announced by the NPHIL, the National Public Health Institute. Apparently, last week, the Minister of Health wrote Dr. Fala, informing him that they were not happy with the way the results were being managed. Professor Larry Topa, one of the strong opposition persons here, was tested and the result came back negative and he was announced positive later on. So he took the issue to the press and it was a big issue in Liberia. So that issue was something the government didn't take lightly And I think that may have been the straw that broke the camel's back for Dr. Fala.
Rodney, thank you so much for speaking with us. We do appreciate it very much.
Thanks, James.
Rodney Sia is publisher of Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Today is International Youth Day, and according to the International Labour Organization, at least 800,000 young Kenyans enter the labour market every year, as youth unemployment is estimated to be as high as 35% compared to the overall national unemployment rate of 10%. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the COVID-19 pandemic has made thousands of young Kenyans jobless.
Today's celebrations for the International Day for the Youth will not be as usual due to COVID-19 pandemic. This year's theme is Young Engagement for Global Action, that seeks to highlight the ways in which the engagement of the young people at the local, national, and global levels is enriching national and multilateral institutions. However, Kenyan youth feel there is nothing to celebrate about, as joblessness is the order of the day. Fabian Kalabai is a Kenyan youth who graduated 5 years ago. He has never been employed in his field of expertise and says that the government does not do much to ensure young people get jobs to sustain themselves.
I've been unable to secure a job for the past 5 years now in this country. The government tends to be not committed to the concerns of the youth in terms of ensuring that they get the necessary and available opportunities. In most government parastatals and in other organizations, the government tends to recycle the old people. They are moving from one parastatal to another department in the government, whereby the youth are being sidelined.
The government of Kenya is trying to ensure youth secure job opportunities that could help young graduates boost their skills by providing internships. However, Dan Orogo, a youth representative in Nairobi, said that Kenyan youths are facing a lot of challenges that make the young people achieve less in the society.
The challenges remains the same. Poverty, underemployment, massive exclusion, violence that are meted to young people in their homes. These has remained a headache when you talk about the achievements and what young people are really able to be proud of at this International Youth Day. And I think these are things that need to be discussed in the context of globalization.
Due to massive job losses in the country brought about by COVID-19 pandemic, the Kenyan government has embarked on initiatives that will see youths benefit from. Chief Executive Officer National Youth Council Roy Telewa said that the government has come up with initiatives that will see the young people sustain themselves.
When you look at what the pandemic has caused to the not only Kenya, but the world at large, it has posed a great challenge to the livelihoods of young people and in terms of business. And the biggest major concern to us as young people is how will our economy recover? We've looked at the issues of policies. In terms of skills, we've looked at technical and vocational skills to just make sure that we prepare our young people ready for the job market.
According to the International Labour Organization, more than 64 million youths globally are unemployed, and at least 145 million young workers are living in poverty. The ILO says youth unemployment remains a global challenge and top policy concern as the world marks International Day for the Youth. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Opposition and rights groups in Zimbabwe have criticized an apparent snub by South African envoys sent to investigate human rights abuses. South Africa, current chair of the African Union, sent the envoys after arrests of government critics and the military halted a planned anti-government protest. But the envoys met Monday with the government and then abruptly left without meeting the opposition or rights activists, several of whom are in hiding fearing arrest. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
A three-member delegation, including former South African Minister of Safety and Security Sidin Mufamadi, met with Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa on Monday at the State House. Mufamadi spoke to reporters after the meeting with Mnangagwa.
We came here as envoys of the the President of the Republic of South Africa. We had an exchange with his counterpart. In other words, we were listening to the reason of the situation and what is being done or the intentions to do extra things and so on. And I know you will not ask us to report to our president through the media. We'll be reporting to the president, who will then interact with the public in part through your good self in due course.
South Africa, which is the current chair of the African Union, had said the envoys would engage with both the government of Zimbabwe and relevant stakeholders to identify possible ways in which South Africa can assist Zimbabwe. However, the three left Zimbabwe without meeting any opposition figures or human rights activists. That resulted in an outcry on social media. Luke Tamborinyoka, a spokesman of the opposition movement for democratic change, says the party does not blame the trio for not meeting other stakeholders before leaving the country.
We put the blame squarely on Mr. Mnangagwa himself, who obviously at his meeting with them made sure that the envoys were blocked from meeting with other relevant stakeholders so that they would not fully appreciate the crisis in Zimbabwe. But we applaud President Ramaphosa as the AU chair in his effort to try to understand the situation in Zimbabwe. The mere deployment of the envoys themselves is appreciation that there is a crisis in Zimbabwe.
Monica Mchangwa, Zimbabwe's information minister, declined to comment on the MDC's accusation, saying the government was waiting for President Cyril Ramaphosa to issue a statement after being briefed by his envoys. Last week, the Zimbabwe government dismissed the claims that it was using COVID-19 restrictions to suppress citizens' rights. Rights groups say there has been a spate of intimidation and arrest of government critics. On July 31st, security forces halted a planned anti-government protest in Harare, and since then, a number of activists have remained in hiding, saying they fear arrest. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 12th. South Sudanese political leader Lam Akol is expressing concern over delays in implementing some parts of the revitalized peace agreement. The leader of the National Democratic Movement says activities that were supposed to be completed in the pre-transitional period have not been carried out. He cautions government leaders against using delay tactics to prolong their stay in power. Michael Atit has the story from Khartoum.
Lam Akol says the parties to the peace agreement are moving too slowly, which he says it is negatively affecting the peace process. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum over the weekend, Akol accused the government of throwing up obstacles to delay implementation of the peace deal. Akol points out that national and state parliaments have still not been formed, and he says the government violated the constitution because the National Assembly have not been dissolved to form a new coalition parliament by the terms of the peace agreement.
You cannot form the executive arm of the government and leave the legislative arm and you think that you have a government. The parliament must oversee the work of the executive. And this parliament is not recognized by the opposition because they are not part of it and they are supposed to go.
The peace deal also stipulates that a unified army be formed during a pre-transitional period, but that has yet to happen. Forces are still in training centers awaiting graduation and deployment. Akol says if the government continues missing deadlines, the 36-month transitional period might have to be extended.
If these activities that I have now were supposed to be done before the 6 months, they have not been done, it means you are going to push them ahead, which also indicates that the transitional period in the peace agreement may not be enough to implement what was supposed to be done in those days.
Akol, who is acting Secretary General for the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, says the alliance remains fully committed to implementing the agreement. Regarding rumors that the SOAL leader has given up on trying to implement the peace deal and has left South Sudan for good, Akol has this to say.
I'm a citizen of South Sudan. I don't hold a government position to take permission from anybody. I'm free to travel as I want. It is there in the Bill of Rights, in the Constitution. So why should my travel be a subject of discussion?
Akol is calling on citizens of South Sudan to hold politicians to their word on their commitment to fully implement the peace deal.
The people should not lose hope. We should continue working hard to see that the agreement is implemented as it is. Because this is the only, it is the last opportunity for the people of South Sudan to be able to exist as one people.
Late last week, the parties reached agreement on how to share executive positions at the state level after several weeks of meetings were held by the committee tasked with allocating portfolios at the state level. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Angola's government has postponed the municipal elections that were scheduled to take place this year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Meanwhile, Angolan billionaire Isabel dos Santos, the daughter of the late longtime president José Eduardo dos Santos, announced Tuesday that she was leaving her position as a member of the board of directors of the telecommunications giant Unitel. Ms. Dos Santos had been embroiled in a financial scandal for her wealth of more than $2 billion acquired from holdings in various companies, including Angola's state-owned oil company, Sonango. Mario Parvai is a veteran independent Angolan journalist.
In a statement issued Tuesday, Isabel dos Santos speaks of, I quote, honor and pride for having built one of the first telecommunications networks in Angola and having participated in the development of this company, end of quotations. Isabel adds that after 20 years dedicated to the creation, development, and success of Unitel, she sues to leave the position of member of the company's board of directors in the same letter. Isabel adds that the Angola economic and the telecommunications markets are experiencing particular adverse economic conditions and seems counterproductive and irresponsible to allow a climate of permanent conflict and systematic politicizations in the boards of the administrators. I must underline that these positions of Isabel dos Santos comes out after a lot of press from the Angolan government on Isabel dos Santos, and High Court have some process on the business human. We will see what happens next. But the last news are saying there are some kind of divisions between the boards of directors. But the important thing is that Isabel dos Santos is no longer the strong woman in the telecoms company Unitel, which I remember was created in 1999.
How much does this have to do with the fact that Isabella dos Santos was accused of mismanagement when she was chairperson of Sonango?
At some extent, it is not directly related, but at some extent, because she has been during the last 2 or 3 years under pressure from President Lorenzo government, taking in account that Sonango has a strong positions in Unitel company. Alongside other shareholders, Isabel is no longer in a position that she can face this kind of pressures on the government side.
Mario, Angola is supposed to be having local elections this year. Are those elections on schedule to be held?
Not at all. Some top officials from the ruling party, MPLA, saying the recent that there's no condition in the country to promote the local elections. After all, due to the pandemic of COVID-19, so there no will be local elections during 2020.
What does the opposition say about that? Are they in agreement to postpone the election?
No, the opposition disagree, and they made a strong statement saying the ruling party never had the political willing to promote local elections this year due to the growing discredit of the government and the worsening of economic and the social conditions. But I think, in fact, just because COVID-19, so people are also under strong economic and social pressures. And these political issues apart for opposition parties and civic society lobbies, are not, I would say, the more important worries of the common citizens, if you understand.
Thank you very much again, Mario, for speaking with us.
Thank you very much, James. Keep in touch.
That was Mario Paivai, a veteran independent Angolan journalist. He was speaking with us from the capital, Luanda. Twice weekly, charter flights of up to 80 people, who Italian authorities describe as illegal economic migrants, resumed this week from Italy to Tunisia. The flights, part of an Italian-Tunisian agreement, were put on hold during Italy's COVID-19 lockdown. The number of arrivals from North Africa saw a sharp increase in July that has put a strain on migrant reception centers, particularly in the south of Italy. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
The growing number of illegal immigrants arriving from North Africa concerned the Italian authorities, who have had a number of recent meetings with their Tunisian counterparts to address the issue. At the end of July, Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio said that unless Tunisia took significant measures to rein in the departures, Italy would suspend 6.6 million euro in cooperation funds for Tunisia's development. After a spike in Tunisian arrivals, Italian Interior Minister Luciana Lamorgese flew to Tunis at the end of last month.
Sì, a luglio sono arrivati, si sono moltiplicati gli arrivi da parte della Tunisia.
She said that in July, the number of illegal Tunisian migrants reaching Italy increased significantly due to the country's serious economic crisis. These, she added, are economic migrants who have no right to remain in Italy. Italy's requests, including the stepping up of controls along the Tunisian coastline and a resumption of the twice weekly repatriation flights that were taking place ahead of the COVID-19 lockdown in Italy. More than 4,000 Tunisians have arrived in Italy since the start of this year. Following the pressure applied by the Italian Foreign Ministry, Tunisia agreed to resume the flights and said it would increase patrol teams and surveillance along its coastline in order to stem illegal migration towards Italy. Reception centers in Italy, having to deal with the COVID-19 emergency, have been struggling to cope with the number of migrants, who amount to 14,000 since the start of the year. The reception center in the southern island of Lampedusa again reached its bursting point at the start of this month. The center at Pozzallo in southern Sicily reached a similar point, and migrants began leaving the center. Italian authorities are now testing all migrants who arrive on its shores for coronavirus and have deployed ships off the coast of Sicily and Calabria where migrants can isolate. After their 14-day quarantine, the migrants will move to a variety of reception centers across Italy. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
And that's it for this Wednesday, August 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington, saying have a good day.
Join a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week. This weekend, Issues in the News moderator Michael Williams will lead the panel on the latest developments between President Trump and Congress in agreeing on the fourth COVID-19 stimulus package after negotiations between congressional lawmakers and the White House reached a stalemate over the weekend. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndumbulu and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.